people who have devotion and commitment issues along with their faith in God. And God, men like Abraham and Isaac and Jacob really demonstrate that true, genuine faith. But on the other hand, there's we see these things pop up once in a while amongst their family. We're going to get into, we've already touched upon Jacob's sons. Remember, Jacob's sons are going to be the great grandsons of Abraham, aren't they? We got Abraham, Isaac is a son, Jacob's a grandson. His sons are going to be the great grandsons of Abraham. So we're getting farther and farther away from Abraham, and you can see the lack of faith in some of the sons. I don't know, maybe they were faithful, but their flaws are pointed. Those mentioned in the blessing to Judah, that's in chapter 48. Shechem is actually a prominent town. So in the rest of 39, we have God appearing to Jacob there and blessing Jacob, changing his name again to Israel, re-emphasizing that name change. I am in 35. I'm sorry, 35 blesses Jacob. 35:13, then God went up from him in the place where he had spoken with him, and Jacob set up a pillar. He pours out a drink offering. He pours oil on it. So Jacob named the place where God had spoken with him Bethel. They journeyed from Bethel, and there was some distance to go to Ephrath. And Rachel began to give birth, and she suffered severe labor. This is where Rachel dies after giving birth. She named him Ben-Oni, which means son of my sorrow, but Jacob or Israel calls him Benjamin. And if I say Isaac instead of Israel, I mean Israel or Jacob. So pardon me on that. Rachel died and was buried on the way to Ephrath, that is Bethlehem. Jacob set a pillar over her grave. That's Rachel's grave to this day. Then Israel journeyed on and pitched his tent beyond the Tower of Eder. Then we have that verse 22, which we already touched upon last week. Reuben went and lay with Bilhah's father's concubines, and Israel heard of it. The last part of 35 is the answers to page 13. List the 12 sons of Jacob by their mothers. We've got Leah, Bilhah, Zilpah, and Rachel down there at the bottom. If you want to, you want the answers, there it is, right there in chapter 35. I don't know if it was last week or the week before we were drawing some lessons about the contrast, about the favoritism Jacob showed to Leah and to Rachel, or he showed favoritism to Rachel and not to Leah. Leah was loved less. Remember, we're making some spiritual application about that. Do we love the Lord like Jacob loved Leah, or like Jacob loved Rachel? Just making some spiritual application there, if we can. It seems like we can. Some good thoughts around our love for God. Putting ourselves in Leah's shoes and putting ourselves in God's shoes. He related to Leah because mankind overall loved God less. And their allegiance was not, and love and devotion was not to God, like it should have been, mankind. Keep your thumb on 35 and 36. If you go back to chapter 29, this is something I did not point out about Leah, and I find it very interesting. Now the Lord saw that Leah was unloved, and he opened her womb. But Rachel was barren. Leah conceived. Are you with me? I'm 29:31. So there the Lord saw that Leah was unloved, and I think this shows his compassion. He opened her womb. Leah conceived and bore a son and named him Reuben, for she said, because the Lord has seen my affliction, surely now my husband will love me. Then she conceived again and bore a son and said, because the Lord has heard that I am unloved, he has therefore given me this son also. So she named him Simeon. And she conceived again and bore a son and said, now this time my husband will become attached to me because I have borne him three sons. Therefore he was named Levi. What do you notice about the way she named her sons? Did you hear that, Dad? Is he going to say that? All had to do with the way she felt about the way her husband loved her. Yeah. I hadn't really noticed that till this study. That really hadn't popped out to me. I mean, I knew she felt unloved, but I didn't make the connection that every time she had her first few sons, she named them according to the way she felt about that. That was, this woman is, wow, I just can't even imagine, I can't even imagine. Number one, we got to remember how important children were to women in that culture. And then again, how important the marriage relationship is too, and the love that needs to be shown in that relationship. Very difficult when you've got four wives going on. So, yes. Yes. Doesn't matter, you know, if the youngest get married first, and yeah. Yeah. That's, yes. Laban says that's our custom for the oldest to be married first, so that's why we tricked you, basically. Yeah, and yeah. And the birthright was especially connected to the males, but there seemed to be, at least with that family, there was a custom there to marry the oldest off first. But we can see the problems it all caused. I mean, boy, you read through that one chapter where it seems like Rachel and Leah are in a birthing competition, and they were, in a sense. What chapter am I looking for? 30. Yeah, and then they start throwing their handmaids at Jacob, and it's just, that's kind of a bizarre chapter too, also. But let's move on from 35, unless you've got any more lessons we can get out of that. Yeah, Dad?
Before you leave the fact that they had idols,
yes.
Back in chapter 31, when Jacob was leaving, and Laban was found out some of the idols had been stolen.
Yes. Rachel took him. Actually, who, Laban?
Yeah, Rachel was sitting on.
Yes, Rachel was sitting on her, is he her father? Yeah, sitting on her father's idols, that's right. I don't even know if Jacob knew about him. He must have by the time we get to chapter.
No, because I think he said if you find him in something, whoever took him
to. Yes. Yeah, so, but evidently this comes to his knowledge, Jacob's knowledge in 35. He has them bury them under a tree there near Shechem or Shechem. Okay. Yes. Yeah, yeah, yep. Back in the chapter where he's trying to leave Laban's household and then agrees for a few more years, and essentially what he does is makes his flock stronger and healthier. And I have never understood that whole rod thing, how that's working. I read over that again, and I just decided I didn't want to go off and research that because I'm not a farmer. Yeah, we'll open it up to class. Does class have any ideas as to why that was working?
Well,
Yeah, God. Yeah. Yeah, it's. Yeah. Yeah, but the mechanism to do it is just odd to us, but it worked because God did it. Yeah. Yeah, well, that's what faith is all about, too. It demands the unreasonable and believing it and trusting it. Laverne and then Joe.
Leah had these four sons.
Yep.
And verse 35, she didn't have any more children.
Right. She will later.
Oh, does she?
Yeah. That's why it has six under her. But notice, she calls the sons from her handmaid her sons. Leah will call those sons her sons. That's a cultural thing, and that's just the way they looked at it. Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
You know, and it's blackmail to get unfinagled to what we wanted.
Yeah.
As far as Rachel
is the handmaid, it could possibly be Sarah's mother because at the time
you couldn't have children, so in modern day, today, they have someone
else
carrying their
child because that female did not able. But she gave him, I think the term wording is as a wife. So he's got four wives, essentially. Ends up with 12 sons and a daughter. And we talked about, Kyle summarized that chapter that was kind of horrible about what Simeon and Levi did to the Shechemites. Shechem and his relatives. So we get to chapter 36, and there's a whole thing about the descendants of Esau, which becomes the nation of Edom. In case you're wondering the significance of that chapter, we may say, so what? There's too many names in there. Yeah, there are, but that becomes the nation of Edom. Edom becomes significant as they move their way into Canaan. 37, we introduce to a young man named Joseph. He does some things which gets him sent off to Egypt, almost murdered, and then sent off to Egypt. And then we pick up his story in 39. But in 38, we have a strange story focusing on one of the brothers. Now, so this is probably chronological. So Joseph is probably gone in Egypt, and we're highlighting Judah. Too many J's in this family. So here we have Judah. Departed from his brothers. Terry, do you feel like reading? Chapter 38. And I won't have you read the sensitive things here if you're not comfortable. Go down to verse 7. 38, 1 through 7. Yeah. Yeah. Page turn. All right, thank you. So very short and sweet there in verse 7. Judah's firstborn, evil in the sight of the Lord. The Lord took his life. How did he do that? Doesn't say. When did he do that? How old was he? Didn't say. Why did he do that? It does say. He was evil in the sight of the Lord. The next brother was supposed to take Tamar and perform the duty as a brother-in-law to her. Later on, this becomes the kinsman redeemer law. Keep your thumb here in 38, Deuteronomy 25. If you want to jot that down on your worksheets, 25, 5 through 10. Deuteronomy 25, 5. When brothers live together and one of them dies and has no son, the wife of the deceased shall not be married outside the family to a strange man. That means outside the family. Her husband's brother shall go into her and take her to himself as a wife and perform the duty of a husband's brother to her. It shall be that the firstborn whom she bears shall assume, this is the important part, the name of his dead brother and the blessing, the birthright, the inheritance, all that stuff goes in under there, so that his name will not be blotted out from Israel. And then it goes on, if the brother refuses, it's actually a shameful thing if he refuses. And she is allowed to shame the brother if he doesn't take her. Kind of a strange law, but that's in the law of Moses, and that's developed, you know, from they've already got this custom going on here, and it was probably put into place by God because God was displeased with Onan doing what he did, and he took his life also, so Judah has two sons that are gone. And that third one needs to be given to Tamar, but he's afraid that third son might lose his life. See how he puts that in? Judah said to Tamar, "Remain a widow in your father's house till my son Shelah grows up," for he thought, "I'm afraid he too may die." All right, so who wants to summarize the rest of the chapter? I picked on Kyle. He did a great job summarizing the Shechem chapter and Simeon and Levi. How about this one? What goes on here? Dad?
Well, Judah didn't give his son. What is the name of the book you said?
Shelah.
Okay. To Tamar.
Yep.
But in the meantime, Tamar's.
He's got a friend down there, yep. Judah's wife has died.
Okay, yeah, that's right.
Yeah, I left that out too.
And so he comes to this town and
verse 12, Judah's wife dies, right. So he goes to this area and Tamar goes there too. Okay, go ahead. Yep. Yep.
Goes in and likes to see the prostitute.
Mm-hmm.
She asked him to leave something for her.
Mm-hmm.
Leaves his second ring.
What's he going to pay her with?
Yeah.
What's he going to pay her? He pays. Says he's going to pay her with a young goat, but she wants. But she wants a pledge. Okay, you're doing great.
Okay, so anyway, he goes back, and later, when she's pregnant,
yep.
Judah hears about it. He tries to kill her.
24, bring her out and let her be burned.
Okay, and that's when she says, ask him whose second ring this is.
Yes. Boy, she must have planned this out pretty well. Please examine and see whose signet ring and cords and staff are these, and Judah recognized them.
And Judah realized what he had done.
Yep, boy. He realized. He sure did. So there's the, then she gives birth to twins, Zerah and Perez. Okay. Bible has some R-rated material in it. Okay, and then we hit Joseph in the next chapter. So this is a weird, if somebody not familiar with the Bible and they're reading along and they hit this chapter and they keep going, this chapter kind of slaps you in the face. Wilma, what do you have? 21. Boom, boom, boom. Timnah, his friend Hira the Adullamite. Yeah, Timnah, this is Canaanite territory. They is, Abraham's family, yeah. Tamar. What was she? Her name was Tamar. He doesn't say where she's from. Is she a Canaanite? That's who Judah marries. Judah marries. Okay, there. Thanks, Nathan. Number one, he marries a Canaanite woman. So here's a great grandson of Abraham marrying a Canaanite woman. Good point, Wilma. So they're going off track right there, Judah is. She bears Ur, and Ur was married to Tamar. Tamar, it doesn't give us a lot of her background, but you're right. Why did she go and even do that kind of thing? Where's her thinking? Well, visiting, yeah. That's what we have up here. Judah has righteousness issues. Is that one way to put it? Is that kind of light? Is that too light? No, I mean not serious enough. Is placement and promise. Yeah, major righteousness issues. And you say, what does placement and prominence mean? Well, we've already touched upon those promises that Israel gave to his sons in 48. Is Judah going to be pretty much blessed? He and his descendants? Yeah, he is. The Christ is going to come through this guy. Tamar is mentioned in Matthew in his lineage, Christ's lineage, with Rahab, who was a harlot. And Ruth was a non-Israelite. Bathsheba is in the lineage of Christ. I mean, there's not perfect, sinless people in that lineage, male or female. So the Jews need to be careful about saying, we are the sons of Abraham. What did Jesus say to them? I can raise these stones up to be sons of Abraham. Where's your heart? You're looking at me, the Son of God, and you're not believing in me and trusting in me. See the thread of faith all the way through? Why I keep pounding on that? Salvation by grace through faith. And that theme is from Genesis chapter 1 all the way through. Because God is bringing about a way to save mankind who keeps wandering away from him and loving him less, like Jacob loved Leah less. See the amazing lessons that come out of here? And when we hit Joseph, oh boy, and I know many of you know that, how much you can learn from Joseph. But, so we ask, why is this here? Why is this chapter in here? And Dad, you had a hand up. Did you want to add?
Well, I wanted to get to the detail, but I didn't want to interrupt
you. Is it on this chapter? Oh, okay. Was there a hand back here? Jeff, you have something? Okay. Okay, think about why is this chapter here? I've already touched on it in many senses, but go ahead, Dad. What do you got? No, she wasn't. Right.
But this is in Canaan territory, and that's a lesson within the Son of
Right.
It should have been unusual.
All, it should have been unusual for what? Yeah, and in this town, they said there is no temple prostitute there. I use that accommodatively when we talk about Christ's lineage, that Tamar was a prostitute. She wasn't by living. She was at that moment, though. So you're going along. You're in the story of Joseph, and then you get this story about Judah, and it's sordid, kind of like the one with Simeon and Levi. And yet, God is going to bring Christ through this lineage here, through Judah. Which ought to give us a lot of appreciation and love for our God, that He's working with flawed people and still bringing them about His purposes. Amen? That's a wonderful thought. That's why this is here, I think. Mom. Yeah, he's still working with flawed people. Well, right, which is why we can learn a lot from these, learn a lot about staying away from favoritism if we can in our families, and just a lot of little tidbit lessons in here. Mrs. Givens and then Joe. Yeah. Yeah, and Ur would be Abraham's great-great-grandson. Apples are getting farther and farther away from the tree. Mom. Yeah, I absolutely agree. Some of the reasons I'm bringing this up is when you begin reading in the New Testament and a lot of the things Paul deals with and dealing with the Judaizing teachers. Well, Jesus dealt with it too, with the scribes and the Pharisees. But Paul especially, and how the Judaizers and the Jews put so much emphasis and were so proud of their lineage and being the sons of Abraham and the children of Abraham. And they must not have read much of this. If they did, they didn't take it to heart. And this is our family album too. It's definitely their family album, but this is our family album in the spiritual sense. So there's lots to learn from it. And they put so much stock in the physical lineage and being sons of Abraham, and yet the Bible, even before they came upon the scene, those Jews, if they had just read their Old Testaments, they would realize they were a flawed people. Joe. The Jews in Jesus' day and Paul's, yes. Oh, this here, yeah. No. And Paul does make the point, yeah, the Jews were special in the sense that God worked with them, and especially those, the faithful remnant, to bring about the Christ, and yet they rejected the Christ, and so that's why that third promise to Abraham really comes to light in the New Testament. All the nations of the earth will be blessed. And that's why this is our family album, because we're in that number. Isn't that a wonderful thing? See the wisdom of God and all that? That's what I'm trying to bring out here in this. As we go along in it, yes. Oh, yeah, because they were tempted. They're human beings all the way back here, just like we are. We face the same struggles in many ways.
They're not actors, they're humans.
Yeah. Oh, is that from a commercial?
Yeah.
And that's what this is. They're not actors, they're humans. Carm, you look like you have a thought on your mind. No? Okay. I'm just checking. All right, anything else on 38? That fascinating chapter in many ways. 39. Thanks, Tara and Shirley, for reading. Wilma, do you feel like reading? Chapter 39, 1 through 6. Okay. Wow. We're already in Egypt. So how does Joseph get there? Okay. And I meant for Wilma to read some out of 37. And I trust you read this at home too. But Steve, let's back up to 37. Let's see how Joseph gets down to Egypt. Because there he's on an upswing there in Egypt. He's set over Potiphar's house. But there's a pit before he gets there. That's chapter 37. So Steve, could you read 1 through 8, please? Is everybody with me? I'm in Genesis 37. Okay.
37.
Yep. Okay, and Steve, you're probably familiar with the story. What he has another dream, and what is it? Remember that about the moon and the stars? Okay, go ahead and read 9 and 10. Yeah, and his brothers were jealous of him. I find this interesting, but his father kept the saying in mind. That reminds me of Mary, things Jesus said and did, and she kept these things in mind. Okay, so here's this young man, Joseph, about 17. He has these dreams. He tells them to his family. We can argue all day about whether that was a wise thing, whether he was just innocently telling them and asking them, what does this mean? Or whether he was, I don't know. Don't know his motives, but this is going to work out in the plans of God, isn't it? So somebody help me. Nathan, can you summarize the rest of the chapter? What happens to Joseph? Okay, so their first mode of action, MO, mode of operation, is to kill him. That's their motive. They want to kill him. That's their plan. Motive, plan. Who intervenes? Reuben, the firstborn. Don't shed his blood. Okay. Let's throw him in a pit. What was Reuben's plan? Come back and rescue him. Right. Okay. Thank you. So the rest of the chapter, Taylor, you want to summarize that? What happens? Sorry, Taylor. Yeah. Reuben's a little bit upset about that, isn't he? Tad, but he doesn't tell Jacob about all of it. What's their plan? How are they going to disclose this to Jacob? Cover the tunic in blood. Yeah. And Jacob is totally, what's that? Wild animal took him. Okay, and they have Jacob make the conclusion that a wild animal. They didn't say that, correct? Jacob makes that conclusion. He's very distraught. So here we have Joseph literally in a pit in life. And then what Wilma read for us, I'm sorry, I jumped to, did I hear anything? 39, he's taken down to Egypt. And how does Joseph's life go from there? Does it go down even farther, or do we have a rise? Okay, right here, Potiphar's house. He prospers. And Potiphar gives him control over his whole house. Who is Potiphar?
Captain
of the guard. That'd be like the Secret Service. Or in the Roman Empire, the guards close to the emperor. pretty high up duty. Pretty important in terms of Pharaoh. So he's elevated in Potiphar's house. And Joseph has a wonderful, happy life in Potiphar's house for 110 years. He's married, has children, and everything is rosy. No. So Laverne? Laverne? Do... Yeah. Here's a... Yep. Yep.
She lied.
Here we go. So here's prison down here. And let's pause there a minute. So we could put Joseph's life into about four categories. I'm not trying to make his story sterile. It's just we can look at it this way. There's four main injustices or tests in the life of Joseph. And we can use the word victim. Or he has a test of hatred and jealousy that he endured from his brothers. Looked like Jacob fueled that. How did Jacob fuel that jealousy?
Favorites.
And what one thing did he do, Kyle, that really gave him a coat, very expensive coat, of the multi-many colored tunic?
He also said that if you go to all of them and bow down to you, and you're going to bow down to
the... Jacob saying that in front of the brothers? Yeah, so that fueled that thing too. And that's God's wisdom in putting that in the text, because later on in the text, it's going to tell us, Moses is going to write, they bow down to him. He's the victim of lies. I'm thinking he's more than 17. I don't know how long he's in Potiphar's house, but I don't know. Is he 19, 20, 21? I don't know. But he's good looking, and he scorns a woman. Hell hath no fury for a woman scorned. She just flat out lies. Whew. Look at his response to her. There, in chapter, what chapter is that? 39. Look at his response. There is no one greater in this house than I, and he has withheld nothing from me. He's talking about Potiphar. Except you. He's withheld you from me because you are his wife. How then could I do this great evil and sin against God? So he's thinking about his master, and he's saying, you, his wife, want me to violate his trust. Look at that, how he's thinking about his master and not himself. What's the common thing in our culture today? If loving you is wrong, I don't want to be right. That's a song. Joseph is not going that way. How can I do this against my morals? He's 17 plus years old and knows something about morals here. How can I do this against God? And did he learn that from Jacob? Respect for God and faith in God? I think he did. He refused immediately. He counted the cost realistically. He resisted persistently. It happened day after day, verse 10. He did not listen to her to lie beside her or be with her. So he resisted persistently and he fled the trap decisively. It's a great way to avoid sexual sin. That'll be our lesson close today. Ted, wrap it up. Well, yeah, she was all over him, sounded like. I don't know. I don't know, Ted. Yeah, but, yeah, I don't know. His anger did burn. Yeah. And it's interesting, no trial, no witnesses. Just throw them in there. Wilma?
Well, I have a side note that I was myself from past studies.
Yes. Yep. A eunuch like her husband? Yes, yes. Actually, something I hadn't thought of, but that's something to chew on. Can't prove it. Yeah. But boy, she was forward.
It's interesting that these people recognized, Potiphar and several others in the Bible, recognized that God was blessing these other people.
Oh,
however,
yes.
They never turned to God.
No. No, for your assignment for next week, highlight how often it says the Lord was with him. Joseph, not Potiphar. The Lord was with him. Okay, and then we got to close. Joe said that. Did God regret ever making woman? Yeah, that's a good place to stop. All right.